In a world in which movies struggle to find plot, Alan Adams of The Main Edge breaks it down for you in Pass the Popcorn. Now on Downtown with Rich Kimball. Let's
all go back here on Downtown, and it's, yes, time for Pass the Popcorn. Alan Adams joining us in studio on this Monday afternoon. Happy Monday to you, sir.
And to you, my friend.
Whew. Gonna come up for air. You wrapped up your run of Mr. Burns at Penobscot Theater with great crowds this weekend. I know, because I was there Saturday.
That's right. Yeah, no, we closed her out, had a robust showing from audiences this third weekend. It's always touch and go. Like, that's, you know, the subscriber base has largely been, depleted at that point. So it's like you just hope that the word gets out and that people are interested in what you're doing. And, and they come in and enjoy the experience. And it seemed like people did, which was really nice.
The show was phenomenal. One of my favorite shows I've seen at Penobscot Theater. And we were just talking about it in the break. Everything came together. The cast, the script, the directing, stage management, the set, costumes, everything. It was just an unforgettable. It reminded you of what you love about live theater.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's the sort of thing that you can't really recreate anywhere else. No. Like, that's part of the joy. And I think that's one of the underlying messages of the piece itself, is the, you know, the value of live performance, the value of theater, the value of that sort of, in-person kind of storytelling. So yeah, it's, I mean, a phenomenal group. Like, we all adored each other, had a really lovely time. I don't want to, embarrass the guy, but, like, honestly, like, Jonathan Barry might be the best director I've ever worked with.
Wow.
Like, I mean, he just, like, this experience was just such a phenomenal one. One that felt collaborative in a way that I think is necessary for this sort of show, because it is such an ensemble-based piece. And then, of course, you take into account all of the design team, everyone just operating at the top of their games, and right on through to, like, Reed Davis, the stage manager, and the folks who are working backstage. Like, it just, like, every piece worked, and you just don't get that all the time. And so when it happens and you've sort of caught that lightning in the bottle, you just try not to, like, you don't want to jinx anything. So you're just like, okay, this is a great thing. Let's not overthink it. Let's just embrace what we have. And we were fortunate enough to be able to do that. So,
well, I've seen you do a lot of great work through the years, but I think this is the best thing I've seen you do.
I'm incredibly proud of this show.
You had to stretch yourself there. Some singing, some dancing.
I did.
It was great.
Not the sort of thing that I'm necessarily known for doing, but, I knew from the get-go that this was going to be a challenge, but as I made clear to anyone who would sit still long enough, I wanted in on this one. As soon as it became clear that it was going to be, a part of the season, like, I just, anyone who would listen, I was like, just so you know, I want to be in this. I don't care how or in what capacity, but I need to be involved. And Jonathan was generous enough to take my strengths into account and cross his fingers that weaknesses could be addressed. Thanks to our wonderful music director, Rob Laraway, we were able to do that. And so I got up there and I'm not going to go so far as to say I'm a terrible singer, but I am not what you'd call a gifted performer in that respect either. I don't know that I've ever been as comfortable singing on stage, I have Rob to thank for that.
That was great. Well, kudos to you, everybody involved. I loved it. I wish I could see it again. Wish I'd been able to get there earlier so I could go back and see it a second time.
Yeah, and the great thing about a show like this is it does continue to evolve. You know what I mean? Like, just it's basically the same show as we had on opening night, but so many details, nuances, like, grow and evolve as you just grow. You settle into the script and the sort of foundation that you've built, and once you're there, like, you have a little bit of room to explore a little bit. And we were fortunate in that we were a group that trusted ourselves, trusted each other, and were able to sort of, take those little leaps when the moments presented themselves without worrying that you were going to somehow upset the apple cart. So, yeah, no, we're very fortunate. We were all, you know, varying stages of emotional messes after the show last night. I anticipate wandering aimlessly around my living room for a few evenings this week until I until I can sort of internalize the fact that I do not, in fact, have somewhere to be.
Stella will be happy.
Yes. Yes. Stella, the cats. And my wife might like to see a little bit more of me as well. Right. So, fingers crossed I don't wear out my welcome too quickly as far as that goes.
Alan Adams joining us here on Downtown. Well, let's talk movies. Did you get to see anything in this busy week?
I did. A couple of things, actually. We carved out a specific time because we both wanted very much to head to the theater to see the Fall Guy.
Oh yeah!
And I went and saw the Fall Guy this weekend, and I also was able to find time in my Netflix viewing to take in Unfrosted, the Jerry Seinfeld written, directed, starring. One could argue it is the Citizen Kane of toaster pastry movies. One of these I enjoyed very much. One of these I did not enjoy so much. We can discuss that however you would like.
And I don't know which one is which. So, but I think I do. So let's go with the Fall Guy first.
Okay. I'm assuming that means you wanted to hear about the good time I had first.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
because if that is the case, then you nailed it. Because this movie was a delight. Like, I enjoyed myself at this movie so much in so many different ways. So for those who are unfamiliar, The Fall Guy was a television show in the 1980s. Starred Lee Majors. As Colt Seavers, stuntman, one of the a super fun show with an iconic theme song.
Yes,
so we live in the world now where you can't really make any, like, there's nothing new under the sun, and so it was only a matter of time, I suppose, before we tackled this. And ordinarily, I tend to run kind of lukewarm on these sorts of, like, oh, let's take a beloved television show and turn it into a movie. It's more miss than hit, I think, when Hollywood takes those swings. But I gotta say, this one really worked, and I think it really worked largely because of the team behind it. Specifically, David Leitch was the director. David Leitch, he's responsible for the John Wick movies, and a longtime Hollywood stuntman, like was Keanu Reeves' stunt double for many, many years. And so the idea of a stunt performer turned director making a movie about stunt performers, it's like, okay, so this guy, like, gets it. And so what you get is this almost love letter to old-fashioned Hollywood movie making, where, like, all the stunts are practical, and so you actually get that sort of that tactile sort of sensation that is often lost when you go with some of these more VFX heavy sorts of projects. But yeah, so the basic gist is you've got Colt Seavers, played with Charm for Days by Ryan Gosling. Man, that dude, it's like, it's one of those things where I don't even care what you do anymore.
No.
Like, he's just so, he's just so charismatic. Like,
he is a movie star.
Yes, you know, he has it.
Yeah.
And, you know, the much fabled, I know it when I see it. And when he's up there, like, you see it. So he's the stunt double for a famous action star named Tom Ryder, played by Aaron Taylor Johnson, who's awesome in this movie. He's also in a sort of burgeoning relationship with one of the camera operators, this woman, Jody Moreno, played by Emily Blunt. I don't think it's spoiling too much because it happens almost immediately, but there's an incident, and Colt leaves the business and basically hides himself away, and no one can find him, and he's kind of a lost soul. He's parking cars at a Mexican restaurant and just basically living a sad life. But he's pulled back into that world when Gail Meyer, the notable producer best known for working with Tom Ryder and played by Hannah Waddington, and who is also awesome in this, turns out that Jodie has finally gotten her shot at the big time. She's directing a big budget sci-fi epic called Metal Storm. And according to Gale, Jodie wants Colt to come to Australia to serve as Tom Ryder's stunt double again. He gets there, finds out Jodie didn't actually ask for him, and is kind of super mad at him for disappearing. But as he soon finds out, someone wants him there for nefarious purposes.
Oh.
I'm not going to go into too much detail, but suffice it to say, our man Colt finds himself wrapped up in the middle of a mystery that has wide ranging implications both for those in his immediate circle and for the wider world as well. And he winds up having to use his stuntman powers to help save the day, which is awesome. Like, it's like, he knows how to fall down without being badly hurt. So guess what he does a bunch? it's super fun. It's an incredibly, like, charming movie. The chemistry between Gosling and Blunt is legitimate. Like, I was saying to Sheridan as we were driving home, I'm like, I hope someone somewhere is already working on another project for these two, because they are a delight to watch together. And, they're both very talented. They have a wonderful energy together. And, you know, when you have that sort of anchoring your, I don't know what you call it, your action rom-com situation, it's not a movie that necessarily needs to be labeled, but the storyline, it's light, but it's fun. The performances are excellent. Like, everyone involved very much understands the assignment. Aaron Taylor Johnson is full on like A-list nightmare, in a delightful way. Hannah Waddington is going for it in the way that only she can. And you've got your central pairing, and again, phenomenal stunt work across the board, from like real like car crashes to big falls to like helicopter stunts and motorcycle jumps and all this stuff. And it's all real, because that's where that's the world that this guy comes from. And the truth is, like, it makes a difference. And I think it's interesting to see that some filmmakers are finding their way. Well, you know, I was going to say finding their way back, but like the David Leitches of the world never really left. Like, that's always been the world. But, like, you know, I look at something like, like George Miller's work, whether it's Fury Road or the upcoming Furiosa, the sort of Fury Road prequel. Like, he's a big proponent of practical stunts as well. And when you see that play out, particularly on the big screen, like, it just feels more real. You know, because it is real. Like, it's obviously it's under highly controlled conditions and whatever. But those people are actually in. There are people in those cars that are flying around and getting blown up. Yes, that is an actual dude who's being set on fire and then thrown into a rock. Like, that those are real things that are happening, as opposed to something that's happening inside a computer. And that viscerality, I think, contributes greatly to the enjoyment, because there's an awe, I think, that comes to seeing these people like do these things, to the point where, and this was a delightfully meta touch, but there's a brief exchange in the film that involves our man Colt Seavers discussing with another character the fact that actually there are no Oscars for stunt performers. Thanks for asking. Why is that? That is a great question. I don't know the answer to it. Like, I mean, just like that, just that real sort of like sort of a wink and a nod to the folks out there, where it's like, yeah, you know, this is something that's probably overdue.
And is there a Lee Majors cameo?
You know what? Yes. It was one of the things that I went in being like, I need this to happen. It does. And we do get that iconic theme song as well.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah. So it was one of those things where I knew that I needed a couple of things from this movie, regardless of how other, you know, not old people would feel about it. Because, like, it was funny, actually, on the way out of the theater, this woman was talking to the ticket taker, and he was like, yeah, you know, it was this great old show with Lee Majors. And the woman was like, well, I'm here for Ryan Gosling.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yep, that's fine, too.
Yeah.
You know what, lady, you got your money's worth.
Yeah, there you go. Well, excellent. I thought that would be good. I thought you would like it. Well, let's hear about Unfrosted.
Oh, man. It's... It kind of broke my heart a little bit because I'm sitting here and I'm like, okay, so this is like on its face, this is stupid. Okay. You're doing like this sort of fictionalized like story of like, you know, the origins of the Pop-Tart. Okay. That's dumb. However, recent years we have seen movies sort of pull off that kind of like, whether we're talking about the weird Cheetos movie or Air, the movie about the Air Jordans, you know, those sorts of things. It's like, okay, well, you know, and it's Jerry Seinfeld who, well, he's been kind of putting his foot in it lately, but still, you know, he's an iconic figure in my personal comedy past. So it's like, okay, you know, the fact that he wrote it gave me a little bit of pause. The fact that he's in it gave me a little bit more pause. And and this is your first ever feature, you know, your directed feature. Okay. But I mean, the cast looks great, just an absolute like stacked cast. And it is not good. It is not a good. It's a movie that doesn't quite seem to know what it wants to be. Like there's this sort of. Like it skates in direction of absurdity, but never quite fully commits. And so there are these absurd moments, but then there are other moments that are treated more realistically. And you know, and when you put Seinfeld at the center of the frame, it's like, okay, like everyone else has to step it up because the dude can't act.
No, never could.
No, that's
looking at the camera, and, Jerry.
It's kind of his whole deal. Yeah. So it's like, oh, okay. So we're putting him in the middle. So everyone else sort of surrounding him, I think, is in a lot of cases overcompensating.
Mm.
But I mean, like, listen to this. Like, okay, so Seinfeld plays a character named Bob Cabana, which, whatever, who is an employee. Of Kellogg's, apparently loosely based on William Post, in case you were wondering.
Okay.
Melissa McCarthy is in this as a former Kellogg's scientist who has since moved to NASA, but is recruited to come back to participate in the Frosted toaster pastry wars race, whatever you want to call it. Jim Gaffigan is the head of Kellogg's. Edsel Kellogg III, which is again, a hilarious name. But then you've got like Max Greenfield, Amy Schumer, Peter Dinklage, Christian Slater shows up as a mysterious like milkman, which is awesome. Bill Burr is JFK.
Whoa.
Because, you know.
Yeah.
And then it's like Dan Levy, James Marsden, Jack McBrayer, Thomas Lennon, like just this incredibly like stacked comedic cast. And I've held him back because I need to make special mention because he is easily the best part of this movie. Hugh Grant as Thurl Ravenscraft.
Yes.
who was the original Tony the Tiger, among other fairly iconic pop cultural figures. Ravenscroft.
Ravenscroft, yes. Who also sang "You're a Mean One."
Yep, he's
Mr.
the guy.
Grinch.
Yep, our man Thurl was very present in the mid-century, but yeah. So basically, this movie is built around the idea that, you know, we're entering into the 1960s, and you know there needs to be some sort of great leap forward in breakfast technology, cereal and milk not really doing it anymore, and so both of our Battle Creek giants, Kellogg's and Post. Are in a race to be the first to develop the first shelf stable fruit filled breakfast pastry. and so, as you might imagine, we get a fair amount of mirroring of the space race in ways that are occasionally funny, but more often weird and nonsensical. Yeah, and it just sort of meanders along for about an hour and a half, and then you know, we get a winner, and then and that's kind of it. It feels like such a colossal waste of so much talent.
Right.
I think that's the thing that really bugs me about it is, like, you're gonna bring all these people in, like all of these incredibly talented people in like some of the funniest people like currently out there, like generational, like and like generational leaps in terms of humor. You know, you got the, you know, the folks like Seinfeld and Jim Gaffigan, who's a like a longtime Road Warrior. You got like, you know, Amy Schumer, who's in the generation behind them, and then like some of the younger, like a couple of young SNL guys, like just like all these wonderful, talented people. And you're gonna give us this?
Yeah.
Like I just like I wanted it to be better. Like, and it's not even the conceit that bothers me. Cause I'm like I saw enough where I'm like, okay, this could have been funny. This could have really worked. And it doesn't. And I have no problem saying it is almost certainly 1,000% Jerry Seinfeld's fault.
Script, acting, or direction, what's the biggest weakness?
I think it's funny because they're all weak in different ways. The script feels very much of... like what's the comparison? You know how, like, you know, if... Like artists like Damien Hirst have like these huge projects and they hire these people to do all the actual work,
right,
and he puts his name on it.
Yeah.
It has that vibe. Yeah. Like there was like there were clearly like three or four writers on this.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much of how much writing Mr. Seinfeld actually did. Again, he's you know, he's in the movie and you know, there's only so much lipstick you can put on that pig.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like he's just not good. Like he's just not a good actor. And so that sort of undercuts all the work that everybody else is doing and kind of leads them, I think, to all push a little bit. And so like you have these sort of more, these larger sort of more bombastic performances that are fine, but like they shouldn't be necessary.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know, like, I think the biggest issue I could say I have with the direction is that, it was utterly forgettable. Like I can't to this, like right now sitting, and I watched the movie last night. I can't sit here and say to you a specific directorial choice, good or bad, that made any sort of impact on me.
It just, when I heard about it and started learning more about it, my thought was, well, you've had a lot of time. You know, all you've been doing is comedians getting coffee in cars and a little stand up here and there. I would think with the 20 plus years you've had, maybe a bigger idea than this.
Or a better realization of the idea you have. I guess there's, when we talk about like, and I mean, I think that's an excellent point. He's like so much time. This is what brings you back.
Right.
Like this is.
Why this? Why now?
You know, it's just the only thing I could think of is that, you know, is that Netflix just wrote him a gigantic check. And he was like, great. And then time passed. And then he's like, oh, crap, I need to do something. So
I got that Pop-Tarts joke I wrote. Maybe
right,
like, that'll be a movie.
What's the deal with Pop-Tarts? So, it's just kind of a bummer on a number of levels because, you know, and again, like Seinfeld, like so many of his, you know, of his sort of generation is clearly sort of. Traveling down that slippery slope to crankdom, and that's what happens, I guess, when you're famous and rich enough for long enough. Like that's just how what happens to your brain, which again is also a bummer. But man, this is two decades of nothing, and this is what you got. I mean, come on, Jer, come on, bud. Like I mean, 2 hours of you know, like Airplane Food, the movie would have been better than this, you know, like no grapes, no nuts. What's the deal? Like, give me like run back the greatest hits. It would have been boring, but at least it would have been better than this.
Alan Adams talking movies with us. Well, good. I'll go see The Fall Guy instead.
You absolutely should.